Masses of men and women pass by slowly. Anna Maxwell Martin, Ewan Bremner, Robert Sheehan, John Bishop, Kevin Doyle, Sam Hazeldine, Michael Maloney, and Andrew Redman. Accused, written by Isabel Gray and Jimmy McGovern. A woman sits waiting in a dark holding cell, her face somber. A guard peers in through the barred window, then opens the door, letting in a little light. The woman, Tina, stands up and steps out into a corridor. She holds out her right wrist, and the guard snaps a handcuff around it. Tina's wearing a smart dark suit, and her brown hair's in a short ponytail. The guard guides her along the straight corridor, towards a barred door that's opened by another man as they approach. A flashback to a young man running over grass in sunshine. Now a middle-aged man behind the wheel of a car. On the back seat, Tina's now cuffed to a sorrowful-looking youth, Stephen. She's dressed in a prison officer uniform.
Married, miss.
How long are you doing?
6 years. What's his name?
What'd you do?
Stab someone. Why won't you just tell me his name?
Who?
A woman. You got kids?
Brett, hear that? Stabbing a woman?
Only doing as I was told.
Oh, right. Someone told you to do it.
Yeah.
Who?
Alistair Campbell.
She gives Stephen an unimpressed look. The tall security fences and a camera outside a juvenile detention centre. The car arrives at the two sturdy wire gates, which are opened by a pair of wardens. Security monitors show the vehicle driving in and parking in a wet yard. Stephen gets out and is uncuffed from Tina. A shaven-headed warden takes hold on Stephen's upper arm and leads him away. Tina is led through a separate side gate, and on the other side of the fence walks past a yard where inmates are playing football. She walks alone along a wet path, then features on a security monitor, walking inside the detention centre. Various screens show different portions of the facility. Tina walks into a corridor, then pauses by a door for Stephen to join her.
Follow me.
He walks with her. She guides Stephen into a communal area where young inmates are playing table tennis, table football, and pool.
All the way through.
Stephen gets threatening looks from some of the young men. A slim skinhead makes a gun gesture at him with his fingers.
Calm it down.
Back up. Put your arms down, Jordan, and then I'll speak to you.
Set down! Set down!
Bang! Stephen Cartwright!
Cartwright!
I just need 8 quid.
You've only had 12. I'm not telling you. You have to wait for truth.
Tina shows Stephen through the chaos, past cell doors, most of which are closed. She opens a cell door for him.
Don't be shy, in you go. Right, a few ground rules. Don't damage prison property, don't kick the door. Don't shout out the window, don't press your panic button unless you're dying. Don't steal your outgoing mail. Everything else you can pick up as you go along, all right?
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
She closes the door on Stephen and glances through its thin vertical window at him before leaving. Stephen looks around his small cell and sits down.
Next.
The white's gone missing. I want the white ball, otherwise association is over.
Seen enough of two government about that. Next.
I've been asking for weeks.
Next.
Don't swallow it.
Next.
You swallow it and you're in deep shit.
Later, a dark green car travels through a housing estate. Once she's parked in her driveway, Tina gets out, then enters her house.
Boiler's gone.
What, again?
For good this time, I think.
Did you call him?
That's right. I won't answer him.
What are we going to do?
Wrap up warm.
I've got to get ready for work. Be warmer there.
Hiya, man. Hiya, kids. You all right?
Yeah. Put it all
right,
away.
Right, priorities. Put it away. You what? I've got three kids of six, eight, and nine. No hot water. No central... Sweetheart, take that through to your dad. No central heating and a forecast of minus 12 overnight. I'd like to see a greater priority than that.
That night, two of Tina's children lie asleep in a bed. A framed photo on the bedside table by a night candle shows all three children together. Another photo shows a small child on a lawn. Slowly, dawn fills the room with light. Later, Tina's husband arrives home again and parks on the driveway outside his white house. Dressed for work, Tina's getting breakfasts ready. The children are wearing woolly hats.
I'm on, love.
Hi, babe. Need a new boiler. It's $2,000.
No. $2,000?
That's without labour. I can get standing one cheaper, but warm out of the power we need. $2,000.
What will we do?
A lot of overtime. Gotta go, babe. I'm gonna be late. See you, kids. Be good for your dad, please.
He pours cereal. The sun glints through the detention centre's tall wire fence, and Tina treads the same path into the building. Inside, she looks through a cell's window at the skinhead, Jono, reading a letter. He digs his hand into his trousers, and Tina moves on. A lad's sitting writing at a table in the next cell. She looks in on Stephen and sees him sitting on his bed, just as she left him. With a twinge of sympathy, she unlocks the door, opens it, then steps in. He looks up at her.
Where's your toothbrush? We'll get it out, you live here now.
Right.
Do you know, it would be easier if I made a bit of an effort.
He nods.
Right.
Are you on something?
No.
And do you need something, antidepressants, anything like that?
He told me not to touch them.
Who?
Alistair Campbell.
You taking the piss?
No.
Tina stares at him.
You will.
Stephen thinks with a frown, then shakes his head.
Homesick.
Well, then why don't you write? Write a letter to your mum.
Write a letter to me, ma'am.
Yeah.
No pen.
Oh, fine. Here. There you go. Pencil.
Thank you.
Tina steps back out of the cell and shuts the door.
Tina? Saul Garvey's got bellyache again, needs to go to healthcare.
What, now?
Yeah, they can't come for him because they're short and we are...
Frank, I think this one's a nutter.
Why?
I don't know, I just do. We should tune him up. I don't think we should leave him on his own.
Tune him up, OK. Get Garvey.
All right. Garvey!
She now brings the inmate, Garvey, through a security door.
You finished, mate.
Told you I haven't finished the game yet.
What do you mean you haven't finished the game yet?
Come on, mate. Let's go. Come on. What are you doing?
They're keeping hold of Garvey. Doc will see him later.
Hey!
Put down those cues now. Give me that.
Did you not move him, Frank?
I warned you.
With Frank unable to hear her, Tina walks along the corridor to Stephen's cell. Through the window, she sees him with a blue bedsheet tied around his neck.
Oh, Christ. Stephen! Oh, God, what have you done? Oh, you stupid idiot, what have you done? Oh, Frank!
Frank comes running with the other inmates.
Get him! Back to your cells,
Nick! Help me! Give me your mom!
Back to your cells, Nick!
Got it. Number 8, now! Get a number one gunner down here, quick.
Get in yourself!
While Gary bundles the inmates back down the corridor, Tina pulls on purple latex gloves, while Frank tries to pull the bedsheet noose off Stephen's head.
Another one by the door!
Get in yourself, Jonah!
You must get back!
Gradually, the inmates are herded back into their cells, one after the other. Tina gently tips Stephen's head back and puts her ear to his mouth to listen for breathing. She places a plastic sheet with an air nozzle in it over Stephen's face, with the nozzle in his mouth, then performs heart compressions. Frank watches anxiously as Tina then breathes into the outer end of the nozzle. Stephen lies completely limp as she alternates between heart compressions and mouth-to-mouth.
Weevil.
She finally stops, breathing hard with exhaustion, then sits back on the floor. Frank looks out of the window. Tina looks shaken.
Don't touch anything, leave everything exactly
as it is. I asked you to do him up.
Always gonna. Come on, let's go.
I can't leave him like this.
Got to. There's a crime scene now.
Why'd you leave him on his own, Frank?
Frank steps into the corridor with a frown. The governor hurriedly arrives, followed by Gary.
Had he been written up? Tell me he hadn't.
Now Tina's in the dock in court, while Frank's in the witness box.
The governor wanted to know whether Stephen Cartwright had been written up as at risk of suicide. Is that correct?
Yes.
And had he been?
No. I also informed the governor that the medical officer that had seen Stephen in the reception had no concerns about his state of mind.
Did you yourself have any reason to be concerned?
No. His probation report hadn't been received at that point.
And Stephen Cartwright had not threatened to harm himself in any way?
Not to my knowledge. The lad's death was a tragedy, but all of the proper procedures were followed.
His death could not reasonably have been prevented.
No.
The governor.
Know anything about this?
He was writing to his mum, sir.
It'll have to be entered as evidence. You okay? You want to see the MO? If you want to go home, I'll keep an eye on her, sir.
I'm fine, thanks.
Any reason to anticipate problems over this?
No, sir.
Officer Dakin?
No, sir.
Good. There'll be an inquiry, obviously, but everything should be perfectly straightforward. Nothing to worry about.
Frank gives Tina a wink. She looks blank. Wearing orange bibs, the inmates begin pouring into the visitors' room, where their visitors are already sitting at tables. Gary and Tina sit at a table keeping an eye out across the room. Toying with a pen, Tina's gaze falls on Peter, a tall man with dark hair, and the only person sitting alone. She frowns slightly, then gets up and heads over to him. She walks slowly between the tables.
Hiya, who are you visiting?
Hey, me lad, Stephen Cartwright.
She stares at him.
Is there a problem?
No. No, no problem.
She smiles at him, then turns and walks back towards Gary, glancing back at Peter as she goes. Gary notices Tina's unsettled.
What's up?
Where's the senior officer?
Oh, he's out there, but he's with the number one governor, why? What's up?
That's his dad.
Who's dad?
What do you think, Gary?
Fiddling nervously with her pen again, Tina watches Peter as he keeps an eye on the door from the detention centre. He straightens up in anticipation when it opens, but then sees that the young man who emerges is not his son. As Peter continues to wait, Jono's girlfriend gets up abruptly nearby.
Why would you say that?
Don't go.
Hey!
Don't you fucking go!
Jono!
Don't you dare go, you stupid bitch!
Jono!
Come back here, you stupid bitch!
Jono!
You stay out of it. You keep your nose out, right?
Sit down.
You keep your fucking nose out.
Down.
Jono does as he's told.
We've had a suicide, Jono. Otherwise, he'd be dragging you right up to the governor's office. Do you understand?
I miss.
Visiting is hard enough without people like you making it even harder. So shut it.
Tina walks over to Peter.
I'll find out what's going on for you.
Yeah.
She gives him a reassuring nod, then goes. Peter's now looking quite anxious as he sits waiting. Soon, Tina's standing in a separate room, looking on edge. When the bell rings, inmates start to return to their cells, while their visitors remain seated. Then the visitors start to go. Peter's the only one still sitting at a table. He cuts a lonely figure. He glances around the room. There's no one left now but Gary and one other warden. Tina looks up when she's joined by Frank and Ferris, the number one governor.
Oh, sir, he's here, Stephen Cartwright's father.
I know. I'm waiting for confirmation from the pathologist.
It's just he's not been told.
You've not said anything?
No.
Good. We shouldn't be long, but we do need to confirm that it is suicide.
Well, he's just been sitting there for over an hour, you see.
I'm not going to tell a man that his son has killed himself until I know for a fact that he's killed himself. We'll be in as soon as we can. Now, can I suggest that you... Yes, hello?
When Tina returns to the visitor's room, Peter immediately gets up and comes over.
What's going on?
I think the governor wants to see you.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, I think you do, love. To tell you the truth, I'm getting a bit suspicious and a bit nervous. Can you tell me what's going on?
I don't know.
I don't believe you. My son is here, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's okay?
Yeah.
So can I see my son now, please? Can I please see my son?
The governor's here. He'll explain to you.
Mr. Cartwright?
Yes?
I'm Mr. Ferris, the governor. Would you come with me, please?
No, I'd like to see my son first, thank you very much.
This would be easier if we could go somewhere more
private. Why?
Please, Mr. Cartwright.
Why would it be easier?
Mr. Cartwright, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but your son is dead.
What?
Your son, Stephen, is dead.
Dead?
I'm very sorry. My sincere condolences.
How?
There's to be a full investigation, naturally, but there's every indication that he took his own life.
How? How did he take his own life?
He hanged himself.
Tina looks up at the ceiling.
Where?
In his cell. We'll go somewhere and talk.
Peter finally goes with him.
You too, Officer Dakin.
In the governor's office.
Yeah, seemed like a normal lad. No sign of anything wrong with him at all.
And you brought him in?
I picked him up from Grange in a taxi, sir, and travelled in with him.
And he seemed fine to you?
Yes, sir.
Not depressed or...
No, sir.
It wasn't depression. He used to think that people were talking to him from the telly, politicians, people like that.
Any sign of that?
Frank shakes his head.
No, sir. When I put him into his cell, there's no sign of that.
And later?
No, sir. I checked on him the next morning. He'd slept well and everything seemed fine.
You weren't concerned about leaving him on his own?
Definitely not, sir.
And did you see him again?
Only when I took an inmate to sick bay, sir. I was there for some hours. When I returned, I checked on Stephen immediately and I found him.
And you tried resuscitation?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Cartwright?
Peter looks at Tina.
Why was he on his own?
It's policy.
Even if they're ill?
Didn't know he was ill.
If he was ill, we should have been told. That's a mistake, I know, but it's down to the people at the other end, the people in Grange. Here, we did nothing wrong. Mr. Cartwright, I promise you that.
Peter nods slightly. Then he looks at Tina again.
Thank you.
Her eyes betray the emotional impact his words have had on her. Later, Tina's sitting at a table in the deserted staff canteen. Lost in thought, she seems very troubled. Frank walks up to her just as she's making a call on her mobile.
Hiya. Yeah, can you go in late? Just a couple of hours.
How are you on?
Yeah, I know. An hour then, we had a suicide.
I'd have done the same for you.
Thanks.
Why did you leave him on his own?
I forgot he was there. You were in sick bay with Gary for hours. God knows what you were doing in there.
Hold on, there's no one to take him off my hands.
Me and Gary, and Gary is as good as two men shot. I never had a minute.
She considers this for a moment, then nods. Frank goes, leaving Tina with her thoughts. Sitting in her car, Tina turns the engine off, then remembers her attempts to revive Stephen, the plastic sheet placed over his face, and the heart compressions. She gets out of the car. Soon, she's being welcomed home by her husband, Ray.
Oh, God, warm.
Blow eaters. You okay?
Yeah. Where'd you get him?
You've had suicides before.
Yeah, I found him, though.
Oh, love. Mm. I'm so sorry, love. You're a taxi driver.
I am.
And you work for Omega Cabs in and around Manchester?
I do.
You do contract work?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, members of the jury. Would you mind leaving the court for a few minutes? I need to discuss a matter of law with counsel. You may stand down for a moment.
The judge has seen Peter enter the court.
I do not think there could be any perception of bias in relation to this present case, but if you wish to make representations, please do. It was I who sentenced the young man who died, you see.
Tina and Ray are eating a meal.
Mmm. Oh, I could get used to this, Ray. Time the kids back.
8, she said. Put them straight to bed.
Mmm.
She nods.
We could pop on there ourselves before they get back.
Well, it's too cold, Ray.
Down here, then, on the rug.
Yeah, all right. Do the washing up first, though.
Okay.
Tina's smile fades, and she thinks for a moment.
Told his dad a pack of lies, Ray. Do you know what he said to me at the end of it? Thank you.
Now they're washing dishes.
Why didn't you think?
There's no time. When he's dead, then his dad's in, and Frank's lying through his teeth. I've got to do the same.
You can't go on lying.
I've got to.
You lie under oath, and it's perjury. Prison officer plus perjury. 5 years, minimum, I'd say. Half an hour ago, I was on a promise.
He walks out, leaving Tina to mull things over. The large perimeter gate is unlocked at the juvenile detention centre. Two officers swing the gate open, allowing a prisoner transfer van to leave. Tina enters through a side gate and makes her way into the building. Presently, she and Frank are in a cell, conducting a search.
I don't suppose you understand printers, do you? Wireless printers. Set it up.
As per. Did exactly as I was told.
I'm going to ask to see the governor, Frank.
Huh?
I'm going to ask to see the governor.
What?
To tell him the truth. I did ask you to do that boy up. You didn't. He died.
Frank goes to the open door of the cell and closes it.
I'd lie for you, Frank. I would. I'd lie through my teeth for you. You know I would.
Well, that's all I'm asking you to do.
Well, no, mate. Well, it'd be an inquest, won't there? I'll be under oath. I can't lie under oath.
Right.
I've got 3 kids, Frank.
I know.
I get 5 years and I'm a prison officer. Do you think I'll be able to keep that quiet for 5 years? I'm a screw. No way. They'd crucify me.
Right.
Oh, for God's sake, Frank.
Well, I understand your dilemma, right? You only go down if you get caught. How are you going to get caught, huh?
I don't know.
There's no way. There's only 2 of us know the truth, so you can't possibly get caught.
Can't take that risk.
There's no risk. There's none.
Sorry, mate.
I've got family too, you know.
Yeah, I know that, Frank. That's why I've thought through really clearly, right? And you'll come out of it squeaky clean. I promise you, you will.
How?
Just tell the truth.
The truth?
Yeah.
What? She said he was a nutter, son. He needed 2ing up, and I totally forgot about
him. Yes, you're an experienced officer and you forgot about a lad like that. Why? Because we're totally run off our feet. We're 2 POs short. That's before anyone's off sick. That is why mistakes happen, Frank.
He wouldn't hear any of that. He'll hear you blaming me, that's all.
Just blaming the way things are, not blaming you in any way whatsoever.
I don't want you to do this, Tima.
She looks down.
I've got to. I'm sorry, love.
Tina's walking past Jono's cell.
Good luck, mate.
Put you in his set, shall we, Jono?
Why me? Why are you always on my case?
The inmate she's with hesitates to enter Stephen's old cell.
No.
Perfectly safe. Go on. Go on. Right. A few ground rules. Don't damage prison property. Don't kick your door. Don't shout out the window. Don't press your panic button unless you're dying. Don't steal your outgoing mail. Everything else you can pick up as you go along. All right.
I'm scared.
You suicidal?
Scared.
Good.
She closes the door on him and locks it. The young inmate sits down on the bed, looking thoroughly despondent. Tina's checking beneath tables in the deserted visitor's room when Frank enters and walks slowly towards her. She passes him as she heads for the door.
Did you ask to see the governor?
Yeah.
Is he agreed?
Yeah.
When?
4 o'clock.
Okay, I've got 3 points to make, Tina. Will you listen to them very, very carefully?
She turns to face him.
Yeah.
Okay. One. I'll tell you what killed him. It was all the shit that brought him here. It was nothing to do with me. That was always going to happen. Short-staffed or overstaffed, we can't watch them 24 hours a day.
I know that, Frank, but I've still got to tell the truth. What's...
Okay. Two. He stabbed a woman, didn't he?
Yeah.
She's gone.
Yeah.
So, you are putting scum before I meet a colleague. He's gone.
I've got to.
3/4 of this scum will reoffend, Tina. Every boy in here is 3 times more likely to reoffend, is not to. 3 times more likely to rob an old woman. 3 times more likely to destroy some poor old bugger's life. You know, the only one that's not is Stephen Cartwright, because he's dead. He's dead. Because I fucked up. Been fucking up. I did some poor old bastard somewhere a favour. Now why kick off over that? Why make a fuss over scum?
I'm not doing it for scum. I'm doing it for my family.
He nods his head.
All right. 3, and I really didn't want to get to 3.
What was it?
If you're not prepared to watch your mate's back, why should a mate watch yours?
All right, is that a threat, Frank?
No, of course not.
Frank leaves the visitor's room. Later, Tina's walking slowly along a corridor that leads away from the recreational area. She has her arms folded and is checking the closed cell doors that line the corridor. The rec room is completely deserted. Tina opens a door at the far end of a second corridor that runs parallel to the one she was walking along just moments ago. It leads back to the recreation room.
Officer alone here!
She looks in through the narrow windows of 2 of the cells, observing the inmates inside. She walks on.
Officer Best!
Looking through the window of another cell, she sees the inmate lying on his bed, watching TV. But through the next window, she sees Jono with a blue bedsheet tied around his neck. She hurries into the cell, only to have Jono attack her. Frank's seen Tina enter the cell on CCTV, but does nothing. Jono's pinned Tina to the floor.
Well, do this, Tina. You don't want to do this.
Absolutely.
Years and years
of
what you're already doing.
Years and years.
Stop
sticking your tits out. Get back on your ass. While the lad's looking and gagging for it.
He pulls her trousers off. Frank's expression is one of anguish. Tina struggles against Jono, but he's too powerful for her, holding her hands down as he lies on top of her.
We all know you love it.
No!
So stand. There it is.
He rapes her.
Now you're getting it. You're getting it right. And I'm sorry you're saying a bit, miss. You know what I mean? Because you're used to husbands of yours, aren't you? That little prick with a very little dick. So this is a bit of a surprise for you.
isn't it?
Tina looks away as he thrusts into her. Once he's finished, he releases Tina and climbs off her. Jono seems suddenly frightened, and he retreats to the far wall as Tina, who's clearly in shock, pulls her trousers back up. She gets to her feet and quickly straightens her clothes out. Jono's propped up against the wall, looking terrified. Tina's trembling as she picks up her equipment belt and puts it back on. She turns to face Jono and stares at him for a long time. He doesn't make eye contact with her. She steps towards him and slaps him extremely hard across the face. Then she spits on him. Regaining some degree of composure, Tina tidies her hair. She pulls it into a bunch at the back of her head and clips it up once more. She leaves the cell. Tina unlocks a door and lets herself out. She walks along a corridor and sees Frank heading towards her.
Gotta go home, Frank.
Why?
Not well.
You okay to drive?
Yeah.
You're seeing the governor at 4.
Can't.
I'll tell her.
Thanks.
Want me to make another appointment for you, or shall I just leave it?
She stares back at him for a long time. Tina's car turns onto the street where she lives. She pulls up in her driveway and stops the engine. She's just undoing her seatbelt when she notices that a chain she was wearing around her neck is gone. She thinks. Now, inside the house, there are pans of water boiling on the hob. Wearing a dressing gown, Tina's filling a bath with the water she's heated on the hob, as well as from a kettle. She makes multiple trips up the stairs to the bathroom, filling and refilling the pans and kettle. She picks up a fan heater, carries it upstairs, and plugs it into a socket on the landing. She then places the heater itself in the bathroom. She closes the door and turns the heater on. Now Tina's sitting in the bath, her arms wrapped around her knees, a far-off expression on her face.
What are you doing, Mum?
Oh, I'm not well.
What is it?
Tommy.
Time of the month?
Yeah.
Well, I won't ask to get in with you then.
No.
Shall I make you a cup of tea?
Yeah, thanks. Don't you need to go and get the kids?
There's plenty of time. You want one?
Yeah.
Right.
Can you pull the door over? Get the heat in?
Right.
Ray shuts the door. Tina closes her eyes for a moment and drops her head. She then shakes her head as if in disbelief. Frantically searching Jono's cell, Tina's startled when Frank appears at the doorway.
The governor wants to see you.
She takes this on board, then resumes her search. Frank holds up her chain.
What's it that?
She snatches it from him.
Jono gave it in. How did he get it?
She gives a nervous grin.
Why does the governor want to see you?
She stares at Frank, then steps towards the door, only to bump into him when he doesn't budge.
Can I go, please?
Unblinking, he stares at her.
Can I go, please?
Frank nods and steps aside. Now Tina's knocking on the door of Ferris's office.
Come in.
You wanted to see me, sir?
This boy's got something to say.
Jono's standing there.
Sorry, miss.
And?
It won't happen again. I promise.
I've given him 2 weeks' loss of privileges. And if it does happen again, he's on H-Wing. You think you'd like H-Wing?
No, sir.
I will not tolerate anyone swearing in my offices, particularly in front of members of the public, particularly during visits. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Take him back, please, Officer Dakin.
Sir.
Tina opens the door, and Jono walks past her and out of the office. Tina's now escorting Jono along a corridor. They stop at a locked door, and she makes him stand aside as she unlocks it.
Move!
She half opens the door.
I couldn't do this job with gobshites like you sneaking behind my back. That's why I kept my mouth shut, right?
Right.
Can you keep yours shut?
Yes, miss.
You'd better. Think about rape, Jono. Leave a lot of DNA behind.
A heating engineer.
Right, I've got it to come on at 6, go off at 8:30, on again at 4 for the kids, yeah?
3.
3 it is. Off again at 10:30, yeah?
Yeah.
And any time you want, just press override and it'll come on.
Thanks.
Great boiler. What did it cost you? $2,000, something like that?
Tina nods wearily.
Not more than that.
Two inmates are cleaning a window in the prison art room when Tina comes in.
What are you doing?
Windows, miss.
Your horse is filthy.
I know, miss.
You'll change it then.
Where, miss? Where, miss?
Skysters, eh?
What?
Skysters. Always up to something. Jack Straw.
All right, Frank. What exactly is he up to?
Compensation, isn't it? Got to show us that he's traumatised because he's got some lawyer on expecting megabucks.
Miss, where?
The tap! Over there! Go on!
The two prisoners leave the room.
Says he wants to see the cell his lad died in. You've got to show it.
I'm not doing it.
I was the last person to see him alive. You were the last person to speak to him. We've got to do
it. You do it. I'm not.
I can't do it on my own.
Frank leaves, and Tina looks apprehensive. Soon, Tina and Frank stand waiting as Ferris brings Peter over to them.
Mr. Cartwright, you've met Officers Dakin and Best.
Yeah.
Right, well, I will leave you to it for now, but I will see you before you go.
Right, thanks. I wasn't thinking straight last time we met.
That's understandable.
But I've had a bit of time to think now, so I've got a couple of questions.
Right.
You spoke in the visit room, right?
Yeah.
Right after you found my son?
Yeah.
Right after you tried to resuscitate him?
Yes.
But you didn't mention the small matter of him being dead?
No.
Why not?
I couldn't.
Couldn't because you were upset, or couldn't because your boss wouldn't let you?
Both.
Why wouldn't he let you?
I don't know.
Is it because he was cobbling a story together?
No.
I don't believe you.
Mr. Cartwright!
Tina's looking very uncomfortable.
When you returned from the sick bay, you immediately checked on my son. Is that right?
Yes.
Why?
Sorry.
Why immediately?
I just did.
Well, you must have been worried about him.
Yeah.
Why?
He was new, so...
He was new, and you just always worry about the new ones.
Shall we?
They make their way through the detention centre, their progress captured on several CCTV monitors. Having passed through one of a series of security doors, they walk along a corridor with Tina leading the way. She's wearing a somber, unhappy expression. They pass through another door, which a warden closes behind them. Then Tina swipes her pass down an electronic security reader. She leads Peter and Frank through the recreation room. Then through yet another door. Finally, Tina unlocks the door to the cell Stephen died in. She swings the door open, and Peter stands looking inside for a moment, before going in. Tina and Frank stand in the doorway.
They left him in here on his own?
Yes.
How long for?
Yeah, well, we checked on him quite a few times.
How long was he on his own for?
About 28 hours altogether.
How did he do it?
He ripped up the sheet and tied the pieces together. Sorry, the radiator.
Show me. Please.
She kneels by the radiator.
He had it round here like this, and then it was tied onto there.
I was told that he'd hanged himself.
Yes.
That's not hanging, that's strangling. There's a world of difference between the two, isn't there? If you hang yourself, there's no going back. No matter how unbearable it gets, there's no going back, but strangling. You've got to be pretty determined to strangle yourself to death. This must be some shithole to make him strangle himself to death. Yeah?
Tina notices Frank surreptitiously glancing at his watch.
You said that you checked on him.
Yeah.
So were you the last one to see him?
No.
He was? What was he doing?
He was writing a letter.
Writing a letter?
To his mum.
We can't show it to you just now because it's evidence.
Why was he writing a letter to his mum?
I suggested it.
You suggested he write a letter to his mum?
Yeah.
His mum's dead, love! You suggest he writes a letter to his dead mother and then 5 minutes later he's dead too!
Peter stares at Tina, his face full of pain.
Can we go now, please?
He steps from the cell, leaving Tina looking sorrowful. Presently, Frank seeing Peter off at the main gate.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Peter walks away, and Frank comes back through the gate to where Tina stands waiting.
You looked at your watch.
What?
Just now in the cell.
Yeah?
He was talking about his son. You looked at your watch.
Of course. We've got jobs to do.
He walks away, and she watches him go. Ray takes a phone call from Tina.
Hello?
Hiya, love.
Hi, love, you all right?
Yeah, listen, I'm just about to go and see the governor. got something to tell him, but I wanted you to know about it first.
What is it?
8 days ago, a boy called John Tomkinson raped me.
Looking stunned, Ray lowers the phone. To Ferris.
Frank set me up for it. He did it because I was going to tell the truth about the death of Stephen Cartwright.
Which is?
Stephen Cartwright wouldn't have died if Frank Best had done as I asked and tooed him up.
You told that boy's father he was fine. No cause for concern.
I lied.
Did you investigate her allegations?
Of course.
Did you find there was any truth to them?
None whatsoever.
You claim you had serious concerns about failures and deficiencies in the current prison system.
Yes.
So, had you written to your MP about it?
No.
Or perhaps put your concerns in writing to the governor, Mr. Ferris, or to the Board of Visitors, or the Chief Inspector of Prisons?
No.
Well, maybe you had approached the government, the prisons minister, say.
No.
Well, what did you do then about these serious concerns?
Nothing.
Nothing. No further questions.
So can I say something, please, Your Honour?
Yes.
I'd just like to say to Mr. Cartwright that I'm so sorry for lying to him. And can I say that the look he gave me when I was telling those lies will stay with me for the rest of my life. And I am so, so sorry.
Peter stares at Tina, his expression giving nothing away. Ray's looking at her with sympathy. Tina's dressed in her prison officer uniform as she rides in the back of a minicab, handcuffed to a young offender.
My name's Miss. What?
Is it the car?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
She unlocks the handcuffs.
What are you doing?
Go.
What?
Just go.
So you know what you're doing?
I'm letting him go.
How long are you doing, lad?
12.
12? He's killed someone.
I don't care. Go.
You'll get 12. He'll send you down for this, you crack mare.
You'll die in there, love. Go on, go. Go.
Home?
I'm blowing it in.
No, anywhere but there. They'll find you there. You won't make it in there. It's not safe in there. Now go. Go on. Go. Please, go. Now. Now. Just run. Run.
Come to the base. She's letting go. The mad bitch is letting go.
Tina sits watching the young lad running away, then gets out of the minicab, which is stopped a short distance from the detention centre gates. A warden approaches the vehicle as the cab driver climbs out, but Tina's already walking away in the opposite direction. The young lad is sprinting across a playing field. Tina continues to walk slowly away. In the courtroom, Peter is giving evidence.
The report said that there'd been a lot of damage to his sternum and his ribs, and I couldn't understand how that could happen, so I asked the pathologist and they said it was because somebody fought like mad to save him, to try and resuscitate him. Someone didn't give up on my son, and that someone was prison officer Tina Dakin.
Peter and the members of the jury look over to where Tina's sitting.
Thank you.
Closing her eyes and dropping her head. She begins to weep. Sitting next to Ferris, Frank looks uncomfortable. Unable to control her sobbing, Tina glances over at Ray, who's clearly affected by her distress. He looks at Peter with a nod of gratitude, and Peter nods back. A court official.
Members of the jury, are you agreed upon a verdict?
We are.
Do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty of the charge of assisting a prisoner to escape?
Guilty.
And is that the verdict of you all?
It is.
Ray closes his eyes.
Christina Dakin, you have been found guilty of a serious offence. One that has led already to your dismissal from the prison service, and that now merits a custodial sentence. For whilst I accept that your intentions were honourable, your actions were thoroughly misguided. I send many young men to detention or young offenders institutions. It was I who sentenced Stephen Cartwright. I sentenced him to 6 years. I did not anticipate that he would in fact die in custody.
The judge glances down for a moment.
Christina Dakin, I sentence you to 1 year in prison, but I will suspend it for 1 year. You are free to go.
Ray smiles with joy, and Tina closes her eyes in relief. She smiles at Ray. Now Tina's walking out of court and into a wide hall. She stops and looks over to where Ray's crouching next to their three young daughters, some distance away. She starts to walk towards them, and the kids run to her. She embraces the girls as Ray wanders over. Then Tina and Ray hug each other tightly. Further along the hallway, Peter is standing, watching them. Tina sees him, and they hold each other's gaze for a moment. Finally, he nods at her and walks away. She watches him go. Then, smiling at her family, she takes the hands of two of her daughters, while Ray raises the third onto his shoulders. Together they walk off in the opposite direction to Peter.
A shift in a real-life custody centre later. Lock up here on BBC One at 10:35 after the news, which is next.